Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. We've got some good news this week. The Brewers have won five of their last six games, 5-2 overall over the past week. They head into Monday, two games behind the Chicago Cubs in the National League Central, a half game behind the Washington Nationals for control of the top wild card spot, and a half game ahead of a couple other teams for the second wild card spot. Season ends today. The Brewers are a playoff team. Of course, it's a little more complicated than that. Some bad news on Sunday, even after the Brewers rallied for a pretty exciting win to take 3-4 against Arizona. They lose pitcher Brandon Woodruff to an injury. He's going to go on the injured list. Very unclear with his oblique injury when he'll be back. That is a tough blow. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We're going to be joined shortly by Todd Rosiak. He covers the Milwaukee Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're going to ask some questions about what the Brewers do from here without Brandon Woodruff, because that's obviously going to make some things complicated. Their starting rotation has performed well, but sometimes it feels like it's kind of being held together with baling wire, and now they lose their greatest starting pitcher this season. That is a tough look, and the Brewers are going to obviously be scrambling a little bit, but we'll also talk about some other things. Keston Hira had a tremendous week for the Brewers, the rookie second baseman looking like a star right now, so that's something that they can hang their hat on. We'll talk about what the team is going to be looking forward to at the trade deadline, or how they fill with that spot with Brandon Woodruff. Will it be Adrian Hauser, who checked back into a relief role this week and looked really good on Saturday night? Maybe he's the guy to jump back up into that starting role, at least until they can find a replacement in some other capacity. We'll also we'll talk about a couple other things here with Todd. And then after that, I have an interview with, you're going to laugh at this, with Brandon Woodruff. Obviously, this didn't happen today. The Brewers were in Arizona. I am not in Arizona. I'm in Milwaukee. So I didn't talk to Brandon Woodruff today. I talked to him on the last homestand. And obviously, we don't talk about his injury because that hadn't happened yet. So it's kind of a weird, surreal situation. But that's what I got for you. We're going to chat. I chatted with him about a bunch of things, his success this year, but also hadn't checked in with him since this time last year when he was, we did talk to him this time last year, hadn't talked to him about his stuff in the postseason, of course, hitting one of the more famous home runs in recent Brewers history. So wanted to chat about that a little bit, and we did. Obviously, the timing is a little awkward now that we know he's going on the disabled list, but hey, it's the second week in a row I bring you somebody who's not on the 25-man roster. It was Mauricio Dubon last week, and he had just been sent back to AAA. So that's how this podcast rolls now. That's just what a quirk of the show. But first, let's talk to Todd Rosiak. Here he is, Todd Rosiak, Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Todd, like I just said in the intro there, it's kind of a good news, bad news situation. The Brewers are officially out of their funk. They've won 5 of 6. They're in a wild card spot. They're 2 games out of first. Things are great, except they just lost Brandon Woodruff to an oblique injury. And, I mean, there's probably players like Christian Yelich who you could least afford to lose, but Brandon Woodruff is way up there as the team's best starting pitcher. What does the team do now? Where do they go from here, do you think, to fill that spot and try to figure out what to do with one of their biggest pieces missing?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, and that's, I'm sure, what David Stearns and company are contemplating at this very moment. You look at short-term, you're going to have to replace them internally, obviously, but I think this is going to definitely step up their efforts on the trade market, looking externally to try to acquire somebody. And what do you do? Teams are obviously going to know that Brandon Woodruff is now out, and the Brewers' bargaining power is going to be decreased, I would think, by a great deal. If you're the Brewers, you have to explore all options. I think you kick the tires on guys that are big names. I think you kick the tires on back end kind of guys and hope that tomorrow Brandon Woodruff's MRI shows that injury is not as severe as maybe some people think. There's any number of ways you can go, but unfortunately for the Brewers, the internal options are not the greatest. Can you plug the hole for the time being with a guy like Adrian Hauser, put him right back in there? He's stretched out now. If you need him for another start, sure. Freddie Peralta maybe, but those guys have been so good in the bullpen. you hate to do that. So I guess I'm just kind of rambling, but it's just there's no easy way to no good way to code it. It's just a very unfortunate injury for the Brewers, and one they can ill afford at a very important time here in the season.
Yeah, like you, I would assume Adrian Hauser, who this was his first, Saturday was his first relief appearance after being bumped out of the rotation. I would assume he goes right back into that spot. But like you said, he looked so good on Saturday, and you saw him and another candidate, Freddie Peralta, looked so good out of the bullpen. Peralta's both Saturday and Sunday. And you could see, wow, the Brewers' bullpen really is stronger with those guys in there, or at least performing like that right now. And it hurts so bad to the bullpen to have Hauser jump back into that rotation spot. I think, though, with the trade deadline 10 days away, they probably would be what they do for at least one start. They got an off day in there, so they don't have to, they don't have to address it immediately. I assume Jimmy Nelson's just too far away from being a fixture here. What about somebody we haven't considered, like Trey Supach on the 40-man roster? I mean, is it possible they find their answer in the minor leagues, or do you think it's pretty simple here? It's going to be Hauser or Peralta.
Pretty cut and dry. The answer is going to be on the major league roster here, the 25-man roster, if and when they do make a trade for somebody else. Supach obviously would be an easy add, since he is already on the 40-man and he's had a heck of a year. But to plug in a kid making his major league debut at this critical juncture in the season, I just don't see how that is fair to him or how that makes sense. So I think, Hauser, Peralta, and see what happens in a week or so with the trade deadline.
Of course, the other wrinkle to this is that their reliable rock of a starting pitcher last year, Yoli Chacin, just has not been that this year. He struggled again in Arizona. It was the one game that the Brewers lost in that four-game series. We've brought him up before how it's just something the Brewers kind of have to wait out because they don't have a lot of other options, and that still feels like the case to me, and it certainly does now with Woodruff on the shelf. But even before this, it seems like they can't just give up on Yoli Chacin. I mean, I just don't know if we're going to see improvement at this point. You know, we're past the halfway point of the season, and it seems like he's just in a rut. I don't know if there's something simple for him to work out of it, but it seems like he just is not, he's just not on his game this season.
Yeah, and it's really head-scratching when you think about it, how well he performed last year. It pitched fairly well the year before that in San Diego, granted in a pitcher's park, half his starts, but to just totally and completely fall off the cliff the way he has this year, I don't think anybody could have foreseen that. And, I was thinking the other day, and then my intrepid partner, Tom Hodricourt, also mentioned that opening day jinx, right? Opening day starter jinx. It just continues. Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's like the Sports Illustrated jinx. Just never has been able to get back on or get on track from the very start. And it's really eye-opening when you see his last win was April 30th, I believe. Long, long time ago.
Oh, man, and that's incredible.
Yeah, just everything that he brought to the table for the Brewers last year, just missing. And I think it all starts with his slider. Just has not been able to work his slider the way he was last year, be effective with that, and just not locating. And when your best pitch is you're struggling with your best pitch and you can't put the ball where you want it, when you're not a fireballer like Chacin, who's going to top out and, 90-91, that's a bad combination, and we're seeing the result. And it's been kind of one step forward, two steps back with him. Just when you think like maybe he's turned the corner here, then he goes out and has a start like he had the other night in Arizona, and now we're talking about, until Brandon Woodruff's injury, is he even going to be in the rotation, which is just mind-blowing. That's something we never would have predicted coming into the season.
Yeah, I wonder now, too, you talked a little bit about the trade deadline. I wonder if this completely shifts the Brewers away from even looking at relief pitching, because it seemed to me that they would certainly be in the relief market. But now that they've got this opening on the starting staff, and you can see how strong Hauser and Peralta could potentially be out of the bullpen, I kind of wonder, maybe they're just going to go after a starter, fill that void, and once Woodruff comes back healthy, you can put Chacin in a relief role, or maybe it's Chase Anderson or whatever, but you can cross that bridge later, and maybe they just roll the dice with the guys they have in the relief market, because it seems like if they want to get a starting pitcher, they got to put a lot of eggs in that basket. I don't, like I said before, I don't know if they've got the player capital to go after like a reliever and a starter. It feels like a starter would be a, you know, kind of an all-in proposal, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, or you can look at it the flip side, and you know, obviously the Brewers love working bullpen games, and they did it with such they did it so well last year down the stretch. Obviously, some of the faces have changed, but they have arms down there. Maybe they go out and add another one or two guys to really bolster that bullpen. And you just kind of get a stopgap guy, throw, you know, put him in the rotation, especially if the Woodruff injury is something that's only going to keep him out for, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, maybe on the short end of what is being expected. So, you know, I don't necessarily think we can all of a sudden downplay them not going out and at least adding one relief arm. I think that's pretty much a no-brainer for almost any team in contention, and especially the Brewers with the way they like to utilize their pitching staff. So it's going to be interesting to see, depending on who you're adding. Obviously, the cost is going to be much, much less in terms of prospects or trade bait for a reliever as it's going to be for any sort of starting pitcher. So that's another thing to keep in mind as well.
Kind of remarkable. Zach Davies and Chase Anderson, two guys who were not on the playoff roster to start with last year, two guys who've had their share of struggles, are now the two most reliable starters in that rotation. I'm not sure we could have seen that coming. But with Woodruff out, that is certainly the case. Let's talk about something that was not a downer at all this past week, and that is the play of second baseman Keston Hira. He finished the week 15 of 29 with 9 extra base hits. That included a huge triple on Sunday. He also had a double early in the game. I expected he would be okay. I expected he'd hold his own. I argued earlier in June that if Travis Shaw were completely right, he would be the pick over rookie Keston Hira, who looked okay in his first go-round, but like it didn't seem like he was a world beater. Now he looks like a world beater. I mean, what do you think when you watch this kid play right now?
Well, I fully expect Brewers Twitter on Monday to be talking about Keston Hira replacing Brandon Woodruff in the rotation. And if the Brewers don't consider that, then, David Stern should be fired. But, I kid, of course, but he's been unbelievable. And he's hitting, stack him up against the other hitters in that lineup right now. You know, realistically, where does he rank? I mean, in terms of damage, in terms of clutch hitting, obviously you'd have Christian Yelich up there at the top of the list. Is Keston Hira second on that list? Third?
I think he's second.
Behind Mike Moustakas? I mean, it's very interesting. A kid who's got, less than 150, I think, right around there, let's say 150 plate appearances in the major leagues, and we're already talking about him in that category. The guy's got over 1,000 OPS. Are you kidding me? It's been unbelievable. Really has. And, he's obviously living up to all the expectations, surpassing all the expectations, and delivering in every way possible for a lineup that certainly needs him. So, I like to joke about Brewers Twitter. I will say that Brewers Twitter was right in that case, sending him down and all the uproar that came with that. Travis Shaw obviously did not pan out. They gave him another shot. I understand why the Brewers did it at that time. Obviously, proven track record. You got to give the guy another chance. But, Keston Hira comes back and just picks, he's been better, way better than he was the first time up after that slow start. It was almost like that collision with Orlando Arcia got him going, because he hit that homer the next day in Pittsburgh to right field. And ever since then, he's just been going off. So, just very, very interesting, very entertaining to watch. And talking to the kid, it's like talking to a 10-year vet. I mean, just seems like nothing phases him. Never, it doesn't seem like his pulse ever is raised in big situations. Just looks like a guy who's been doing it his whole life at the major league level. And obviously he hasn't. So certainly one of the real positives out of what's been an interesting season so far for the Brewers.
Yeah, certainly handled his midseason demotion very well, and at a point where he could have been wondering why should I go down, but that wasn't his mentality at all. Before we give Brewers Twitter the full victory, I still maintain that decision made all the sense in the world. I don't understand why they didn't bring him back sooner for the San Diego series, in particular with all the lefties in the Seattle series after that, but you know, that's trifling. He's here now, and he is tearing it up. Travis Shaw, though, you mentioned him, also tearing it up right now at AAA. He's been hitting bombs away, and the obvious issue right now is they have no place to put him if they want to bring Travis Shaw back to the big league level. You're not taking out Mike Moustakas at third base. You're not taking out Hira at second base. Like you said, that might be number two and number three, the guys you rely on in that offense. They might be your second and third best hitter right now. So is there any sort of creative way that they could get Travis Shaw regular at bats? I mean, what sort of scenarios have you thought about as a means of bringing him back up, or maybe not? Maybe they have to leave him down there.
I mean, just based off of what he told Tom last week, David Stearns told Tom last week that they're looking for an extended run of success for Travis Shaw in the minor leagues. To me, that translates to he's not coming up anytime soon. I mean, obviously he's been hitting the ball really well, you know, back on the homer binge again and doing what he does. But, you know, you bring up the point, and that's where does he fit? Where do you put him? If Eric Thames were not swinging as well as he has been lately, I would think Travis Shaw, hey, you know, lefty righty with Jesus Aguilar at first base, right? No brainer. He's played there before. But I don't think you want to necessarily deprive Eric Thames of any at bats because he's been doing really well. So, yeah, that's the question right now. There really is no obvious fit for him. Second base is obviously you know, Keston Hira's spot. Third base, Mike Moustakas has got that locked down, and Travis Shaw, you know, if you take first base out of the mix, he can't play any outfield, which really hampers his efforts to get back on the roster. So we'll see. Time will tell, but I just don't get the sense that the Brewers are in any rush at this point to bring him up, even with him swinging a hot bat in San Antonio. And I'm sure Travis Shaw would love to be back at any point, but I have a feeling he's going to have to continue to cool his heels down there a little bit longer until there's a more obvious roster move to be made.
Yeah, the pendulum has swung where the Brewers were a little concerned about their offense. Now, right now, offense isn't the problem. They're racking up runs. Now, of course, the attention shifts back to the starting pitching. Funny thing happened on Sunday. Tyler Saladino hit a grand slam to retie the game after the Brewers went down 4-0. It was a huge moment. And, of course, the Brewers wound up scoring a few runs late. They win the game. Tyler Saladino, I don't want to pick on him, but he has really, really struggled. And there are guys in the minors who I feel like could be doing some of the things he's doing, other than he is a really versatile guy who plays a lot of positions. He can play in the outfield, and that's key. He can obviously play three infield positions. Do you think the team's got to be investigating alternatives here? Although Sunday's the wrong time to be talking about it because he did just have the big hit, but he has really struggled outside of that one swing of the bat with his tenure in Milwaukee. And he's not here as just a like backup player. He's taking four starts a week at minimum. What do you think about Saladino right now?
Yeah, I mean, talk about a guy who just breathed a huge sigh of relief today. Not necessarily getting him off the hook, but that's the big hit that the Brewers have been, you know, wanting Tyler Saladino to contribute. And that's what Craig Counsell talked about last night. And to see him come through and really turn that game around today was a huge moment. The bottom line is he plays shortstop and he can play outfield. You know, the Brewers need that versatility out of a guy that's going to be sharing time with Orlando Arcia. And you know, Mauricio Dubon cannot play any outfield, or I don't think they're ever going to look at him as an outfielder at the major league level. Obviously, he can play shortstop. The only other guy that would kind of fit the bill of what Tyler Saladino does is Corey Spangenberg, and he obviously has major league experience as well and has been swinging a pretty hot bat at San Antonio, but he's also not on the 40-man that's going to necessitate some roster movement and such, and you know, that's another headache in and of itself. Would it surprise me to see them do something moving up to the trade deadline? Not at all. You know, to add a remember back in 2011, a Jerry Hairston type guy, you know, maybe somebody like that, that, you know, is a little bit more proven and has been productive this year in that type of role, that would definitely not surprise me in the least. And, you know, depending on where they're coming from, I would assume the cost, the price tag wouldn't be too high. So, you know, obviously David Stearns likes to think outside the box with acquisitions. And we all saw that last trade deadline with Jonathan Scope. So, you know, we'll see if maybe they think that an external move there would help them as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point with the 40-man situation. Spangenberg is the guy I'm thinking about as a guy who can do some of the things Saladino could do and maybe give him a try. But like you said, maybe a grand slam certainly doesn't hurt your case to stay on the roster at least a couple more days. This last question might be a little weird, but I'll explain it. Lorenzo Cain made another crazy home run saving catch early in that Arizona series and has kind of put himself again back into the conversation of why he doesn't have a gold glove yet. Some of the metrics actually don't love him defensively as much as they have in years past. And I wonder if you've noticed any sort of fall off at all. I haven't, but then again, I would have said the same thing about Orlando Arcia, and some of the metrics didn't love him. And the coaching staff, obviously they didn't love what he was doing defensively. That's part of the reason Tyler Saladino is here in the first place, to take some of the reps away from Orlando Arcia. Have you sensed any sort of drop off from Lorenzo Cain in center field?
Yeah, and it's hard to say that because of how perfect he was last year. I mean, like, the guy was the fact that he didn't win a gold glove last year is just criminal. I mean, let's just be honest about it. Everybody said it. Craig Counsell said it. You know, to give Ender Inciarte the gold glove over Lorenzo Cain, who graded out metrically as the best outfielder in baseball, period, was unbelievable. But you know, we're seeing some plays this year from Cain that were a little uncharacteristic. You know, him overrunning that ball in the game last week. You know, we never saw that last year. And he, you know, he's human. He's not infallible. But little things like that here and there, you know, have kind of crept in. I think that it's fair to raise the question of his health. You know, I had a very long and interesting conversation with him last week about, you know, him playing every game almost to his detriment. And he readily admits that he's just got this chip on his shoulder from earlier in his career. And he's with the Royals when he was being regarded and labeled as injury prone. And he's dead set against being called that moving forward, and playing through the hamstring injury that he had, playing through the thumb injury that he had. You know, that's cost him a little bit, I think, definitely offensively, and the hamstring probably defensively, getting the balls, probably not getting to quite as many as he did, but it's those highlight reel catches like we saw the other night again in Arizona, the not today catches that catch everybody's attention and get on the highlight reels. And you know, we've seen it in the past with the gold glove. We don't know what people are really looking at. And there's player coaches, you know, people who are involved in the metrics get votes. We're not really 100% sure who all gets votes, but, you know, maybe a lifetime achievement award at some point will be, you know, he'll get the nod for gold glove this year, even though metrically speaking, he isn't quite up to snuff. But I think, what is he, third, you know, third best outfielder by the metrics now in baseball, as opposed to first best. It's not much of a drop off. So, you know, I would expect him to obviously to continue to play tremendous defense in center field, and, you know, a small little gaffe here or there, like overrunning that ball last week in that game. You can live with that when he's going over the fence and robbing guys like the way he has with regularity in these 2 years with the Brewers.
This happens in the Oscars all the time. Guys, you know, both men and women, give performances that aren't considered as great, but they get a sort of a career achievement award. The same thing should definitely happen for Lorenzo Cain. He should have 4 gold gloves by now, and just does not have any yet. Maybe this is the year, no matter what. Thanks for joining us, Todd. Appreciate you hanging out with us again. You can find everything Todd Rosiak writes at jsonline.com. He is the beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We will chat with you again very soon. Thanks, man.
JR, always a pleasure.
Thanks to Todd for that chat. Now we move into my conversation with Brandon Woodruff. Again, I know he's on the injured list now. This isn't something that we did today. It's something an interview we chatted on the last homestand. So this is not as current as it could be, but I still thought you might like hearing from him. He is the first guy, first player or member of the team in any capacity that that has been a podcast guest twice. Last year, we chatted, I think, around early September, as he was sort of, his role was kind of still being solidified, and then he had a great postseason, hit that crazy home run against Clayton Kershaw in game one of the NLCS, pitched very well down the stretch into the postseason, and then starting this season, of course, he's pitched beautifully, made the All-Star game, and there's just a lot, there are a lot of facets to his story. He, of course, had his Major League debut sort of derailed a little bit in that he was working in the bullpen before the game and came down with a hamstring injury, and his Major League debut got postponed for several weeks. Was able to finally get on the hill. Had some great moments last year, even before that postseason success. He had a crazy home run as well in the minor leagues that might be, I gotta say, might be a better story even than his home run against Clayton Kershaw, because it came in a 1-0 game. At the time, his brother had just passed away. His older brother, Blake, was killed in an ATV accident, and this was Brandon Woodruff's first game back. He pitched a great game, hit the home run in his first game back. Crazy, crazy moment when he was back with the Biloxi Shuckers in his home state of Mississippi. So we talked a little bit about that. Again, we chatted about that last year, but sort of comparing the two, I guess, the two crazy moments in time with his bat. He's obviously been known for his work with his arm this year, and unfortunately for the Brewers, he will be missing in action now for at least the next couple weeks as he heals from this oblique injury sustained on Sunday. So here's my conversation. Again, awkward timing given that he is now on the injured list, but my conversation from last week with Brandon Woodruff. My guest is Brandon Woodruff, starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. You just saw him pitch in the All-Star game last Tuesday, and I'm kind of curious just the timeline. Did you know you were going to pitch? Did they tell you beforehand? Was it sort of, you know, see how the game goes? How was it at the start of that game?
They approached me and said that I would probably be around the sixth or the seventh inning, and I think they had already had the first five or six innings planned out, and kind of seeing where we were in the game at that point. And fortunately, it worked out to where I was able to get in there, and it was one of those experiences that not a lot of people get to do. So right. For me, it was more of just having fun and kind of taking it all in, and running out of the bullpen, just kind of looking around and just checking everything out. And it's one of those you don't care what happens right. in the game. It's just one of those cool experiences that you might only get to do one time. Hopefully there's more to come. But sure. For me, it was just all about taking that experience in to the fullest, and I was able to do that.
Compare the butterflies of that moment to your Major League debut. He said it was just fun. Maybe it wasn't a little bit like that.
I would say there was not really any nervousness as far as like your debut, but
right.
I think it was more of adrenaline and excitement and just everything that kind of come with that. It was more of a fun experience, and I would say the adrenaline more than anything, if no nervousness. Yeah. So it was all cool.
So you weren't named in the first group of All-Stars.
Yeah.
And, with pitchers, there's always a better chance than position players, because you see a lot of guys that have to duck out because of scheduling or because of injury. So how much are you paying attention to that? Those few days in the interim, are you hearing things or looking around?
After the first round, it was, I didn't think much about it. Some of the guys come up to me and after and said, you probably still have a chance, whatever, because there's always that chance of guys lining up to throw later. So, just had to kind of wait and see what was going to happen those last couple of days, and fortunately they was able to get in.
You chatted with me in September.
Yeah.
Since then came this moment that I'm sure you've talked about ad nauseum, where you homer against Clayton Kershaw in the first NLCS game one. Did you have any inkling what he might throw in that spot? Did you watch a video of him? I mean, was there any preparation that could have indicated to you or given you some comfort in that at bat to enable you to take that swing?
I mean, I think if anybody's ever watched, Kersh throw, he likes to throw his heater to the glove side and being left on left. I think the only thing for me was just getting in there and seeing the first pitch and seeing the timing off of him. And from that point on, it was just kind of getting in there in fight mode and just trying to make him work. And, you know, I was able to be able to put a good swing on a ball that, you know, he left over middle. And, I mean, obviously he's the Hall of Famer, so, you know, the next time we got to face him in L.A. in Game 5, you know, he punched me out. And then the first outing he had of the year was here, and, you know, you see how I fared in the first – I didn't have much of a chance. So,
yeah.
He's obviously a really good pitcher, and I was just able. I was just fortunate enough to be able to put a good swing on.
Do you remember running around the bases? Like, what do you remember from that moment? What image?
The thing I remember most is obviously hitting it and thinking, you know, I got it good, and then just kind of watching Bellinger pull up at the wall, and that's when I, you know, realized that, you know, I got it. And
yeah.
That was about the time I started rounding the bases, and then just kind of, you know, some emotion just started coming out, and it's just one of those you kind of not blank out, but just you're just running around the bases, not really thinking about much, you know, not really hearing the crowd, not hearing nothing, but so that's kind of what was going on.
How does it sit with you? I mean, that's going to be one of the most iconic moments in Brewers history, really, and you're a part of it. It's with your bat and not your arm. Does that matter to you? I mean, it's obviously very cool.
You know, it's pretty cool. Obviously, I would like to be remembered more as with the pitching. But, you know, I'll definitely take that as a very cool moment, because obviously the relief pitching coming in at that moment, you don't get that a lot of chances to do it. And just to be able to do it off the guy that I hit it off of was pretty special. But, you know, hopefully for some years to come, I can be known more for the pitching side of it than that moment. But obviously you can't take away from that home run, because it was obviously pretty cool.
And we talked about this on the last podcast, but as cool as that home run was, it might not even be the biggest home run of your career. You have the one in Biloxi the day you came back after your brother was killed. I mean, that one, I didn't even realize that was a 1-0 game. That's the storybook home run. Yeah. This is just like a postscript.
That was a pretty crazy day. Kind of like if you wanted to script out a movie of kind of how a game would go. I think I went 6 innings with, like, you know, 9 or 10 strikeouts, and ended up being at the time I come to the bat, we were both had no hits at the time. Me and the other guy.
Oh, I didn't
just
realize
so
that.
Happened. Yeah. Just so happened to get up and hit that homer, and ended up we won 1-0. So that was a pretty cool day.
It reminds me of another outing you had this year where there's no hits and gave up a home run in Philadelphia, but that's one hit over 8 innings. That has to count as maybe your best out. I mean, certainly at the big league level, but overall, is that as good as it gets? Right,
I would
there?
Say, that definitely for me. I think that was one of those days where it seemed like every fastball I threw was on the edge. It seemed like every, you know, all speed I located really well. And I think the biggest thing for me when I'm throwing my fastball to the edges and throwing strikes and getting the hit, I feel like I can, you know, have some outings like that. And but, you know, that's obviously, it's baseball, it's tough to do. So, I mean, that's what we strive to do every time, but it doesn't work like that. And I would definitely say that was one of the better outings for sure.
One last question about your hitting.
Okay.
Start the year 5-for-5.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've had a very good year with the bat. Are you getting tougher pitches? Have you noticed pitches approaching you differently?
Oh, yeah. Even to begin the year, you start seeing, or even back in spring training, the first at bat I had in spring training and at San Diego, we were playing the Padres. And
spring training.
Yeah, the left-handed, I was throwing, I think I was facing Strom or somebody, and he threw a first pitch slider, and that's the first pitch I've seen live, you know, since the year before. So that's when I started realizing, okay, they're probably going to start pitching me. And obviously throughout the season, you know, the first 5 at bats worked out pretty good. But then since then, when they start flipping the breaking balls and curveballs, changeups and stuff like that, it makes it real difficult. So
if you found out the NL was abolishing the designated hitter tomorrow, how would you feel about that? Would
I'd be
mixed emotions?
I'd be upset.
Yeah.
Just because from my standpoint, I like to get in there and hit. So for me, I wouldn't be for it, but, you know, obviously there's mixed, you know, views on it. But for me, I like getting in there and hitting. So
how stoked were you to see the team go after a Mississippi State guy in the first round of the draft? Did you know? You didn't know that was coming or anything, did you?
I didn't know it was coming. I had no idea. I reached out to Ethan after, you know, I saw he was drafted, and, you know, congratulated him and you know, wished him luck and told him if he ever needed anything from me on my end, you know, I could help him out. So and then was able to speak to him when he came up here when he signed. So, you know, pretty cool just to see, you know, another Bulldog taken in the first round, especially by, you know, the team you're playing for.
Last question. We talked last time about you had trimmed your beard, and it was a very jarring thing.
Yeah.
Would you ever do that again? You experimented with that once.
You know, I experimented with it once, and I think, for me, I think I'm going to keep it, you know, kind of clean cut. I think that's what my wife likes.
Yeah.
So
shorter.
I kind of just, that was just one of those things. I'd never grown a beard before, and that was the first time trying, so I kind of just let it go. But I think now I'd probably just keep it pretty clean.
That's what we have for you today on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, a good news, bad news edition. The Brewers are playing very well, half game behind the top wild card spot, a half game ahead of the next spot, so they would be in the wild card game if the season ended today. Two games behind the Cubs, still very much in the thick of it, but Brandon Woodruff out now for an extended period of time, or at least any period of time, with this oblique injury, and the Brewers now have to weigh that situation when they decide what to do on July 31st. That deadline is approaching, and obviously that'll be something we are watching. We'll chat about it again next week, assuming there are no trades beforehand and we have to do some sort of emergency podcast, and we will see what's going on with the Brewers as they get closer and closer to that deadline. Thanks to Todd Rosiak and Brandon Woodruff for joining me this week. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. Find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or at jsonline.com. You can find me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe. That's JRRADCLIFFE. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next week.